The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
We're off and running. Hopefully the live stream is working. We've got a lot to get to on today's program, a lot that happened actually over the weekend here on God's headquarters campus. We had the freshman barbecue last night at our house. 27 new freshmen, excited, anxious. They're already a week and a half into their schooling here at Armstrong College, so they're settled in. And we put the barbecue back a week because of last weekend's personal appearance campaign. So in any event, all of them, I think they represent seven countries. You talk about a diverse group for such a small college, for such a small freshman class, 27 people, and yet they come from all over the world. We have a couple of students from two nations in Africa, one from the Netherlands, one from the UK, of course, a few from Canada, as always, and Australia, the United States, of course. So we really do have quite a wonderful representation. And it does represent, I think, the work in general. The fact that this is a scattered group, it's a small group supporting God's one and only true church, the work that the church is doing. There's a faithful few scattered all over the earth supporting this work. And of course, we've been just really emphasizing, and we did it last night with our discussion, but we've really been emphasizing the importance of, or just reminding these students of why they're here and how that the college is here and that they're here to help support the work. And of course, a big part of that work is proclaiming God's truth to this world. Jesus said to watch and pray always. And so we certainly do watch world events, this program, The Trumpet, The Key of David, all of it. We're working hard to view this world the way that that God does, to see it, to see all of the events of this world under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Well, over the weekend, you had the big G7 meeting, and President Trump tweeting out that the way that the media reports the news and what's actually happening on the ground, it's very different. And we'll see that with what we discuss here in this opening segment. But the way the media report everything, and then as the president said, there's world leaders in France that are just laughing or asking him, why did the media hate you so much? And I'm sure there's plenty of world leaders that that have their share of contempt for President Trump and for the United States. But there is no greater hatred for this president than what you'll find right within America's borders, in the East Coast and the West Coast media, and of course, academia and popular culture, all of those things, so much venomous hatred for this president. As for what's happening on the ground, we're keeping our eyes on this. President Trump, he tweeted over the weekend about his I think it was a breakfast meeting. It was a meal anyway that he had with Boris Johnson, the new UK Prime Minister, Mr. Johnson, and his entourage. And these two were sitting across the table from each other talking about how the future trade deal between these two nations, it's going to be better than anything we've ever had, the president said. This is clip number 9 from that breakfast meeting.
We're looking forward to having some pretty comprehensive talks about how to take forward the relationship in all sorts of ways, particularly on trade. That's right. And we're very excited about that.
We're having very good trade talks between UK and ourselves. We're going to do a very big trade deal, bigger than we've ever had with the UK, and now they won't have, at some point, they won't have the obstacle of, they won't have the anchor around their ankle, because that's what they had. So we're going to have...
That's President Trump talking about the European anchor that was hanging around the ankle of the UK. and they can be freed from that. And the U.S. can, in many ways, rescue Great Britain with this very big trade deal, as President Trump calls it, of course, with respect to trade. Over the weekend, the big news, the big story, the story that all in the media were most concerned about is the escalating tariff war between the United States and China. President Trump had, before he left for the G7, he had all of those tweets on Friday. They hit the news cycle after this program had finished. But the one where he ordered the U.S. companies to look for alternatives to China, this was the tweet from Friday. It says, "Our great American companies are hereby ordered to immediately start looking for an alternative to China, including bringing your companies home and making your products in the United States." He said, "I will be responding to China's tariffs this afternoon." So he had those tweets, and then he orders the companies to come home or to look for alternatives. He said he would respond to China escalating the tariff war, and he did by upping the tariffs on Chinese goods to 30%. And, of course, the media, they went crazy, as you would expect. They went crazy, and yet, again, and just looking at what happened or what was happening over the weekend, the president had some comments when he was about to, board Air Force One, or maybe when he was getting off the plane in front of the gaggle of reporters. But this is what he had to say about China and these tariffs and the escalating tariff war. This is clip six.
"We're having a little spat with China, and we'll win it. We put a lot of tariffs on China today. As you know, they put some on us. We put a lot on them. We're up to about $550 billion. They've been hitting us for many, many years for over $500 billion a year, taking out of our country much more than $500 billion a year. So we want that stopped, okay?"
That's the president saying that we want to stop this. We're being ripped off. And he talked about some of the history and how that really he doesn't so much blame China for this as he does previous administrations. He really hit hard at President Obama and President Bush and President Clinton as well. This is what he said, clip seven.
"China's been hurting our country for 30 years with the money they've been taking out. Other presidents should have done something about it, and they should have done it a long time ago, whether it was Clinton or Bush or Obama, any of them. They should have done something about it, and they didn't. I'm doing it, and I have no choice, because we're not going to lose close to $1 trillion a year to China, and China understands that. I hope that with President Xi, I have a good relationship, but they understand we're not going to do it. And this is more important than anything else right now, just about, that we're working on. We have to make sure that our taxpayer, look, we have helped rebuild China like nobody else, and they've done a great job. And I don't blame China. I blame our presidents, our representatives, past administrations for allowing that to happen. It's a disgrace."
He says, "I don't blame China. I blame our presidents, our past administrations, for letting this happen, for letting them steal so much of our technology and rip us off on trade." Going back to this this meal that he had with the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, one of the reporters, this isn't as easy to hear, this exchange, but one of the reporters asked if the president had any second thoughts on this escalating trade war that was happening over the weekend. And this is how that exchange went down. Clip eight.
"Any second thoughts on escalating the trade war with China?"
"Yeah, sure. Why not?
Second thoughts?
Might as
again.
Well. Might as well.
You have second thoughts about escalating the war with China?"
"I have second thoughts about everything."
"Are you going to declare a national emergency on China?"
"Well, I have the right to. If I want, I could declare a national emergency. I think when they steal and take out and intellectual property theft, anywhere from $300 billion to $500 billion a year, and when we have a total loss of almost $1 trillion a year, for many years this has been going on. In many ways, that's an emergency.
So that's the president saying that he has the right to declare a national emergency if he needs to. But it was the comment about him saying he had second thoughts. And then, again, the media run with this and go wild. Well, what is he saying? What is his decision? What is his plan? He's escalating this tariff war, and now he's having second thoughts. And so they call into question his mental stability because of a passing comment like that. Well, of course, I have second thoughts on everything, he said. I'm always considering decisions and tactics and so on. This was Bret Stephens on, I believe this was CNN, him commenting yesterday on the president being mentally unwell, clip two.
What we saw over the last few days is a president who is either mentally unwell or morally unfit. Maybe both. I don't know. But it's important to simply call these things as we see them. You have behavior that is unprecedented in any kind of presidential history in the United States or frankly elsewhere.
Behavior that's unprecedented at any time in the history of presidents or anywhere, he said. So what will it be this week? Here we are. It's Monday morning. What will the tweet be that sets off yet another firestorm, or the comment that sets off yet another firestorm of outrage? We'll be waiting as the week unfolds, and you'll get plenty of commentary like what you just heard there. Listen to this one from a Duke psychologist. He's a psychologist who works at Duke University. Clip three.
The second issue is that calling Trump crazy hides the fact that we're crazy for having elected him, and even crazier for allowing his crazy policies to persist. Trump is as destructive a person in this century as Hitler, Stalin, and Mao were in the last century. He may be responsible for many more million deaths than they were.
He may be responsible for many more million deaths than they were. Says this guy, this commentator on CNN. He said it was an insult to the mentally ill to call President Trump crazy. That's CNN commentary. He said, I've known thousands of patients. Almost all of them are well-behaved, well-mannered, good people. Trump is none of these. Lumping that is a terrible insult. Lumping that in is a terrible insult to the mentally ill. It's an insult to the mentally ill to say that President Trump is mentally ill. And then the claim about killing millions of people. Millions! Stalin was responsible for murdering at least 20 million. With Mao, it was twice that, 45 million. Conservative estimates. Hitler, 11 million directly. Of course, he was responsible for starting World War II. And that led to the death of 60 million. And according to CNN, that's the commentator, the host, of course, Brian Stelter. He doesn't say anything in response. He doesn't push back. He doesn't set the record straight. He just sits there across the table and nods his head in agreement. I think he caught some flack a little bit later, but he said, well, I didn't really hear what was said because of the technical difficulties we were having. He's more responsible he's just like Hitler, Stalin, and Mao. And when it's all said and done, he may be responsible for many more million deaths than those madmen of the 20th century. This is CNN. Today in the New York Times, this is, again, the reporting on the back and forth with China. It says President Trump offered deeply contradictory signals about his trade war with China on Sunday, ending the day by escalating his threat of higher tariffs, even as he remained isolated from fellow world leaders on a strategy that has rattled the global economy. So the leaders hate him. He's rattling the global economy. It says, a day after defending his authority to order American companies out of China, Mr. Trump started Sunday by conceding that he was having second thoughts. You heard the soundbite. We just played it. Second thoughts about a new round of levies on Chinese goods. It says within hours, he abruptly reversed himself again, saying that he only regretted not raising tariffs even higher. So this is the New York Times. We can't pin him down. We don't know what's going to happen. He's so unpredictable. He's mentally unstable. Listen to this. Front page this morning in the New York Times, the president's rhetorical whipsaw came against the backdrop of tense but cordial meetings in France. It injected fresh uncertainty into Mr. Trump's efforts to try to change Chinese behavior by gambling on the fate of hundreds of billions of dollars in products that flow between the two countries. So that's the way it's all being reported. But what is actually happening? There's the one way that the media read the tweets and the statements, and then the other way that China reads it. And you can go back to what this president was saying all through 2015 and 16. If his number one talking point was on building the wall, number two, a close second, surely had to be the trade war with China. We've played clips and montages before where when asked about it as a candidate, he would say, trade war, we're already in the midst of a trade war. We're being ripped off. Well, listen to this report from Fox News. This is just this morning. This is what happened overnight in response to this escalation, as all the media are saying, this escalation in the tariff war. This is clip four.
Welcome back. China ready to come to the table to negotiate a calm ending to the escalating tariff war, as President Trump says he believes that this is a step in the right direction, for a possible trade deal between the two world powers. Listen.
We're going to start very shortly to negotiate. We'll see what happens. And I think we're going to have a deal because now we're dealing on proper terms. They understand and we understand. This is the first time I've seen them where they really do want to make a deal. And I think that's a very positive step.
The first time, he says, where they now really do want to make a deal. He tweeted this morning, just a couple of hours ago, great respect for the fact that President Xi and his representatives want a calm resolution. So impressed that they are willing to come out and state the facts so accurately. That's what he had to say regarding China's move, reaching out now to President Trump. From Fox News, it says news of the possible opening in negotiations came shortly after President Trump threatened to declare a national emergency that would result in American businesses freezing their relationships with China. It says Trump's tariff barrage on Friday was a response to China imposing its own retaliatory tariffs on $75 billion in U.S. goods. It says at a Group of Seven summit in France, White House officials rejected suggestions the president was wavering and insisted that his only regret was not implementing even more tariffs on China. It says Trump wrote on Twitter that world leaders at the G7 were laughing at all of the inaccurate media coverage of the gathering. Well, then it goes and talks about how that this Chinese vice premier, he's reaching out to the United States. They now want to have talks. They want to de-escalate the tensions. They want for things to calm down. Well, it is a story that's changing day by day. But the president, there's no question, the president is pushing hard. And now it looks like China is beginning to cave in the short term. That's probably what's going to happen. In the long term, we know about the Mart of Nations. We know about the nations assembling together against the United States and Britain. And then with the U.S. and Britain coming together, as we played at the top of the segment, They want the biggest trade deal we've ever had, the U.S. and Britain. Trade, trade, trade. It's a big story. Lots to watch, of course. And we know where it's headed. Prophecy tells us. But in the short term, here's a president, as the former governor of Arkansas pointed out on a Fox program over the weekend. Here's one that's standing up to China, and no one else has done it. This is clip five.
Because he's the first president in our lifetime who's had the will and the courage to stand up to the Chinese and tell them they're not going to bully us around, they're not going to take advantage of us, treat us as chumps, and ruin the workplace for a lot of Americans who had jobs and don't because we let the Chinese cheat us out of those jobs.
The first president in our lifetime to have the courage to stand up to China and all the cheating that goes on. So you have what's actually happening on the ground, the facts, and then you have the way the news media react, which is always very, very different. Listen to what one commentator, CNN commentator, had to say about this administration. This is clip one.
He is reeling from pillar to post. It is completely ridiculous. Nobody can believe a thing that he says. He's got 12,000 lies so far, 20 lies per day. This just means that you can't trust the guy.
You can't trust the guy. 12,000 lies, 20 per day, says CNN, who on Friday just hired Andy McCabe. Andrew McCabe is now a CNN commentator. The serial liar that used to work for the Justice Department within the FBI, the former FBI director or deputy director, you think about the ones that, well, again, it doesn't justify lying or even shading the facts in your favor. But when you look at Papadopoulos and some of those associated with the Trump campaign and how that they paid dearly for lying, for not being honest with an FBI investigator. And here are the actual FBI officials who have lied and lied and lied again. And they get hired by CNN. And then CNN goes on and talks about the 20 lies per day coming from the White House. How many are coming from CNN? Every day. Every single day. Andy McCarthy says McCabe, of course, was the FBI's deputy director before being fired after the Justice Department's Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, concluded that he made multiple false statements to the FBI, including under oath. McCabe was questioned in connection with his leak of investigative information to the media. See, they're all in bed with the media, the deep state. All of these former Obama officials, James Clapper, Andy McCabe, James Baker, Josh Campbell, Aisha Rangappa, Stephen Hall, Phil Mudd, Susan Hennessy, Samantha Vinograd, James Gagliano. That's all CNN. They work for CNN now. And then over at NBC, you've got John Brennan, Frank Figliuzzi, Chuck Rosenberg, Malcolm Nance, Jeremy Bash. All former Obama officials working at the CIA, the FBI, leaking and lying. And then CNN, remember what they did with James Clapper? Well, they brought him on right away. He was the one that leaked all the documents about the dossier and the meetings and what the Obama officials were doing to set up the trap for President Trump. And then CNN comes out with a big report in January of 2017. Shocking revelations. And then Clapper's hired just a little time after that. I forget the exact time, but a short while after that, after he illegally leaks it all to Jake Tapper, then he's a colleague of Jake Tapper's. And then they put these commentators on the round tables going on and on and on about the, what was it, 20,000 lies of this president, saying that the day after they hired Andrew McCabe, of all things. It says here, government officials who leak while demonstrating their contempt, this is Andy McCarthy, for Donald Trump, managed to land on their feet. McCabe joins a CNN stable that includes former Obama National Intelligence Director James Clapper, who's best known for lying to Congress about the government's bulk collection of telephone metadata and for discussing Steele dossier information with CNN shortly before the network published the report about it and not long before it hired Clapper as a commentator. CNN missed out on former Obama CIA Director John Brennan. MSNBC got to him first, who falsely denied, this is Brennan, falsely denied to the Senate that his agency spied on the Chamber's Intelligence Committee. Brennan, who said he was really sorry, was inked by MSNBC. He was really sorry for that. And then gets a job at MSNBC. As Papadopoulos can tell you, non-government types who mislead government investigations don't do so well. Well, it's more than non-government types. It's people who are on the other side of the political aisle. Because he was a Trump supporter, Papadopoulos. So he has to go to jail. General Flynn. He has to have his life savings wiped out. And probably go to jail. McCarthy says there's a great deal of anger out there. People see the kid gloves approach to the Clinton emails investigation, and they can't square it with the aggression of the Trump-Russia probe. They see how lopsided it is. They see the reaction in the media to every single tweet. The nonstop noise. Well, when you look at what's actually happening on the ground, you can see why. You can see why there is such a groundswell of support coming from a silent majority. China finally caves in. China's now seeking to calm the tensions because of some of these tweets, because of some of these statements. It's not going to solve the problems of the United States, and we've been going through this. Andrew Miller, by the way, just coming back to this point about all these commentators being plucked out of the deep state so that they can sit on the round tables at CNN and talk about how many times the president lies. This was from June of this year. He had an article at the Trumpa, yesterday's spies, today's journalists. Today's journalists. Or they go right into popular culture, like President Obama with the big Netflix deal. Andrew says the fact that the major media is hiring spies and agents from the Obama administration is concerning. Since President Trump took office, his Justice Department has more than tripled the number of investigations into government leaks to the media outlets. Many Obama-era spies and intelligence officials are now working for the very news agencies that publish these leaks. They're all working together. It's just stunning, really, that they're doing this right out in the open. And I know there's still the investigations going on, and there's a new attorney general, and evidently their feet are going to be held to the fire, some of these deep state officials. But the fact that this goes on in plain view of everyone, and then we have to continue to play along like these are very serious-minded officials, Andy McCabe, he's going to be on CNN now after lying and lying and lying, and I guess CNN thinks he's going to be telling the truth. It tells you something about what CNN still thinks about Trump-Russia collusion. They still believe the lie. They're still recruiting the liars. They want the liars at those roundtables. Lying and lying and lying. Nonstop. Anything and everything to take down this president. Well, as I said, it's the Jeroboam end, and there's a temporary resurgence. But like I pointed out last week, even for the silent majority, it's leading to this false sense of security. China now backing down, and the American economy doing well, except for debt, of course. But the sins of the American people, the sins of our nation, those are not being addressed. There was a Wall Street Journal piece over the weekend on the values of Americans and how dramatically they've shifted. It says here, this is from yesterday, the values that Americans say define the national character are changing as younger generations rate patriotism, religion, and having children as less important to them than did young people two decades ago. So this study is comparing people from today, the younger generation, to the younger generation from 21 years ago. And they're finding that the young today, surprise, surprise, they're not nearly as patriotic. They're not nearly as family-oriented. And they're not into religion like they used to be. So where is this leading? This generational gap, as it says in the article. The article says, today, hard work remains atop the list, but the shares of Americans listing the other three values have fallen substantially, driven by changing priorities of people under the age of 50. It says some 61% of the in the new survey cited patriotism as very important to them, down 9% from 1998. It says while 50% cited religion, down 12%. From 1998, some 43% placed a high value on having children, down 16 points from 1998. Just 43% place a high value on having children, on building a family. And that's plummeted 16% since 1998. That's not even that long ago. And what did Mr. Armstrong say about the fundamental building block of our civilization, of our society? It's the family. It's the traditional family. And that's what we see falling apart. It's coming apart at the seams. It's being ripped to shreds. And our nations are suffering because of it. So don't be lulled to sleep or lulled into a false sense of security because of the temporary resurgence. We've got to remember, it's just temporary. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
I've mentioned the new class that we have at Armstrong College this year on Winston Churchill. Twice a week, I'm sharing the responsibilities for that class with Joel Hilliker and Brad McDonald. And it's going to be a fascinating and exciting study. We have a little booklet. My father, I mentioned this last week, Winston S. Churchill.